On this Saturday morning, time once again for a wine chat with our friend from Haskell's, Jack Farrell. Jack, good morning.
Hi there, Denny. How are you today?
I am doing well. How could you be nothing less than great on a beautiful spring day like this?
Oh, isn't it wonderful?
Oh,
it's finally come.
Absolutely. What's going on today?
Well, you know, I ran across an article this week about wine or grapes in the United States, and I just thought I'd share some statistics with all our listeners about grapes and wine in the United States. I mean, it's just phenomenal. From a place where back in 1933, while Prohibition was still in effect, in other words, 90 years ago, you know, there just weren't very many wineries. And today, we are phenomenal. Grapes are the highest value fruit crop in the United States. Now, that unfortunately includes table grapes and grapes that are grown for raisins in the United States. Now, that unfortunately includes table grapes and grapes that are grown for raisins, too. But the wine grapes are just incredible. The United States alone produces 12% of the volume of grape wine for the entire world. I mean, that's absolutely incredible. We have 11,000 wineries are located in all 50 states. Yes, that includes Alaska and Hawaii have wineries. Well, we even have, I think it's 73 or 4 wineries in Minnesota, which is just absolutely amazing considering their climate, etc. And however, California dominates the U.S. wine market, making about almost 87% of all domestic wine is made in California. The second state might surprise you, too. That's Washington. I would have picked another state myself. I wouldn't have guessed it was Washington. But Washington produces a tremendous amount of wine. And then Oregon actually is number 4. Believe it or not, New York produces more wine than Oregon does. But Oregon is in that quality bracket in that Willamette Valley. It's just incredible because world-class wines are coming out of that Willamette Valley, particularly with Pinot Noir. They're just absolutely wizards there. But there are other states that do big volume that we don't even think about. Michigan, North Carolina, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Texas produce a tremendous amount of table wine. And it's just amazing that how the quality of that wine has become accepted worldwide. As I said, it surprises me that New York is up there so high, but you don't hear much about them because, frankly, in my opinion, New York doesn't produce much in the way of world-class wines. It produces lots of ordinary wine that is very expensive, and it's pleasant drink. Believe me, it's nice stuff, but it isn't going to jump out at some great exhibition of wines as one of the world's greatest. But we certainly have that in California. It's changed just a ton, really. You know, the first people that came to the United States were the Vikings, and they called this area Vinland because there were vines grew everywhere, grapevines. And we're still the number one consumer of wines in the entire world. No one is even close. We're also number one in all research and development on wine. It's just, like I said, an absolute incredible thing. There's a wine school at the University of California at Davis that everybody in the world, whether you live in Australia or New Zealand, Chile, Italy, France, Germany, you wanted to send one of your people to the University of California at Davis because it is the epitome of all education on wine. And because of that, it also is number one in research and development on wine. So U.S. is exporting our knowledge about wine around the world. Of course, that isn't the first time we've exported something around the world. In the late 1800s, we exported something called phylloxera. Phylloxera is a root louse. If gardeners are listening, which I assume they are because the gardening show follows us here, they're kind of an aphid. And those aphids infect the roots of wine. Well, we sent wine cuttings around the world with those aphids on them, and soon every vineyard in the world was affected with this awful phylloxera, which killed the vineyards. Well, we were real good about that because we sent them the cure, too, because now about 90% of the vines in the world are grafted onto American rootstocks, which our American rootstocks are totally immune to phylloxera. So while we sent them this horrible disease, we've sent them the cure. And today, like I said, it's very hard to find vineyards anywhere in the world where they have just grown on regular rootstocks and not the grafted ones. Chile is an exception because of the Andes and the isolation of it. It never got phylloxera and still hasn't, which is a good thing. And their vines in Chile aren't grafted, but the rest are. But in addition to doing all this wonderful stuff, we have come a long way because we produce wine in the United States that's on a par with wine from all over the world. As a matter of fact, we're a major wine exporter in the East. China and the entire East and Asia, we're right on top with exporting wines to those countries, which are just incredible. Like I said, the most important thing is our cutting edge of technology. That, coupled with old tradition, has made our wine in this country world class. You know, no one ever has to take a back seat to American wines because they're incredible. The quality is right there, and that quality is an absolute incredible tribute to those pioneers early on that brought all that to our country, California being the biggest area, because the climate there just lent itself to growing grapes. And like you say, the wine we produce in California and Oregon, too, in that Willamette Valley, as I mentioned, produces world-class Pinot Noir in Willamette Valley in Oregon. And who knows what's going to come of the other parts of the United States that are making wine. Texas makes a lot of wine, which is absolutely incredible. And with our current deal with the weather, whether it's climate change or global warming or whatever, it certainly is changing the approach to vineyards from around the world. And of course, the most shocking thing was in 1976, they had a tasting in Paris, and American wines bested all of the French wines. Well, of course, this was shocking because all the judges were French, and they couldn't believe it. But anyhow, it happened, and it was a big step up for American wineries. They no longer were apologizing for making wines like French wines. They were making wines that were better than French wines, or every bit as good as. You know, Thomas Jefferson tried to grow wines, and his estate in Monticello in the Virginia, and thought one day this would be a great wine-producing country. Well, what a seer he was. We are a great wine-producing country. And, you know, all our founding fathers had big cellars. Madeira was the biggest wine. Everybody would buy that. Madeira comes from the island of Madeira, and it's a fortified wine. The second most popular one was French Claret, which is Bordeaux. And anyhow, all the founding fathers had wine cellars and drank those wines, Madeira and Claret, with their meals, always hoping someday we'd become a world player, and indeed we have. It's amazing today. Companies like our own Gallo has vineyards in Italy, Spain, Chile, Argentina, etc. And pardon me. And there's other ones too. Constellation is another one that has wineries everywhere, including Australia. I was fortunate enough to know the two Gallo brothers when they got started, Ernest and Julio, and they were dedicated to wine business. I remember Ernest coming into my office once and saying, how can I get in the fine wine business? And I said to him, Ernest, change your name. Well, he banged on the desk and said, never, never. Well, today, Gallo is associated with very good wines. And if you check something out, like one of the hottest, hard-to-get wines in the world is Palmyer from Jason Palmyer, who started that many years ago. It's a Gallo product. They're just everywhere. As a matter of fact, they've even married into the most prominent French family, Boisse. Jean-Charles Boisse married Gina Gallo some 15, 20 years ago. And I don't know whether it's a marriage or a merger, but they certainly, both of them can be very proud of the wines that their families are producing around the world. Our selection and variety in the United States is without question the best in the world. The variety is incredible. And you might wonder, well, how do we determine the variety for wines? Well, you know, there's a grape type. And I remember it was an uphill battle for Frank Sunmacher, who was really the guy who should take full credit. He was an importer, for changing how he approached wine. Years ago, you'd have wines like Claret, Hock, Burgundy, etc., which didn't mean much of anything. And Frank Sunmacher decided, well, we should use the name of the varietals, Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and put it on the package. And he lobbied and lobbied and lobbied, and actually Bob Mondavi was one of the first guys to finally decide to do that. Instead of labeling white Burgundy, he said he'd label it as Chardonnay, etc. And he changed all of that tremendously. In fact, it was kind of funny with Sauvignon Blanc. He decided he'd call it Fumé Blanc. And Fumé Blanc became a very popular wine at one time from the Mondavi Winery, which was Fumé Blanc means white smoke. And it was for Sauvignon Blanc, and it became very, very popular. And so after Frank Sunmacher finished his lobbying, and the wineries began to switch their names, and then they began to take personal pride. And as I said, and then along came that 76 tasting, and that changed everything, because all of a sudden, American wineries weren't taking a back seat to anybody. And I must say also that Sunmacher was joined by Alexis Lachine in producing or coaxing the wineries to use that name. And so instead of Hock and Claret and Burgundy, we had Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc. Anyhow, it's amazing to me. I can remember when people would go into a bar and ask for a glass of white wine. Today they ask for Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Grigio, etc. We not only have become consumers, we've become fairly knowledgeable about what we want. So in the space of 50 years, the wine business in the United States has changed tremendously. And the good news is it's changed for the better. We're producing world-class wines in the United States, and we should be very proud of that fact. That isn't to diminish wines produced everywhere else, but we needn't think that we're a second-class citizen in the world of wine. We're not only a first-class citizen, we're the premier citizen and the premier consumer of fine wines for the entire world. And that's something that I've been privileged in my short lifetime to have seen.
Absolutely. And I was thinking, folks, if they're hearing your words, Jack, and need some help choosing wine or whatever the case may be, any Haskell's location, those folks are glad to help you out.
Indeed. Today we start our 90th year in business. So that's a long time. and picking and choosing wines for everybody from the White House to just you or me. We've done it all, and we continue to do it. Haskell's is celebrating our 90th year with our fabulous spring sale, which also starts today. So any wine you need or want, you can find at Haskell's, no matter what type of varietal it is. We're sure to have it. Not only that, we have these wines at fabulous prices. So stop in today and see our wonderful spring celebration, celebrating 90 years, and you can do it at all our locations: Bloomington, Excelsior, Faribault, Maple Grove, Minneapolis, Minnetonka, Plymouth, St. Paul, Highland Village, Stillwater, White Bear Lake, Woodbury. And if you can't come into Haskell's, go to Haskell's.com. And don't forget that we do deliver at Haskell's.
Absolutely. And let's deliver another show next Saturday, Jack.
You know, Denny, I'm going to look forward to that.
Thanks so much. Jack Farrell from Haskell's.